Welcome to the Potter Discussion.
Welcome back to the Potter Discussion, discussing Harry Potter, Fantastic Beasts, and the Wizarding World fandom. I'm your host, Oscar, and this is episode 183. Thank you all for joining me today on this lovely day. It is, of course, a pleasure to be recording to you. That intro took about 5 minutes to record because I kept saying it's episode 184, but it is not episode 184. I'm sorry. But we are here. It is episode 183. And today we are discussing magical origin stories and myths. Now, this is a rather confusing episode, and it's probably taking me the longest to write out of any episode because this is really something I have to really think about. Really what I want to be kind of going over today is making up reasons of why wizards do certain things, like today, where do spells come from? Why do they, do this? Why do they wear that? That kind of thing. It is not fact. It is 100% fiction, but it is exactly what I want to discuss. Kind of, theorize about what's going on and kind of, make predictions, you could say. So that is what we are going to be doing today. Thank you all for tuning in. But we have an order of business. Before then, last week's episode was a Quizmaster episode, and there was a challenge question for all of those who participated. We have the answer to the challenge question. If you have not listened to the episode and you do want to hear the challenge question, I advise you do that first. That is episode 182, Quizmaster, the Ministry of Magic. That link will be in the show notes. But if you are ready, then here it is. So the Quizmaster question was, what is the name of the security guard? What is the name of the security guard? That is the question. And if you're saying, well, there's more than one security guard, it is the security guard that helped Harry in the Order of the Phoenix. That is what I'm talking about. I think you kind of all got that. So what is the answer? Well, today we're finally going to be revealing the answer. And for those of you who are avid readers who have read the text closely, you maybe even went back to the chapters to look, you will know that the answer to the challenge question is Eric Munch. Eric Munch, the security guard. So congratulations to everyone who got that correct. I am sorry for those who did not. However, there will be more Quizmaster episodes in the future, so you do not have to fret. You will have more chances of redemption. I don't have any ideas for Quizmaster. I mean, I don't have anything set, so if you have any topics that you have specifically for Quizmaster that you want to hear, you can go ahead and email those to me. My email is thepotterdiscussion@gmail.com. That is thepotterdiscussion@gmail.com. But with all of that out of the way, it is time to get into today's episode. So let's get into today's episode. So the first magical origin that I want to discuss is why spells are in Latin, kind of why they sound the way they do. And this was kind of what gave me the idea for this episode, and this was kind of the idea that I thought, that could actually be possible. That sounds very plausible. So my, proposed solution for this of why spells are in Latin is because that is when, the time when Latin was popular during the Iron Age, beginning in about the 7th century BCE and kind of moving forward into the Roman Empire. That's really when, spoken magic was really coming about, and that's why they had to develop spells in their language. And of course, if we were to develop our own language now, the only reason we would put it in Latin or anything similar is because that is exactly how they are right now. But if we were to develop our own, system away from that, it would be in English. It would be in the language that we know how to speak. And that is exactly what the Romans did, what the first, wizards and witches were kind of playing with. And that is exactly what how it evolved and how it stuck around. Because, magic is very, very constant. So they couldn't just change a spell. And of course, they could. I mean, like they could. Spells are getting invented every day, but this the fact still stands that if you even change, you know, how you wave your wand during a spell, you could end up, you know, on the ground with a rhino on your chest. You know, you really never know what's going to happen. So that is why they have to stay so similar. And even if you said it in English, you don't know. Like for example, expecto patronum. I looked it up so long ago. I think it means like I await a guardian. I expect a guardian. That's the roughly what that means. If you said it, if you said like I await a guardian, you cast it like. It might not have the same effect. So that is why it has stayed the same, and that is why it is it even started like that, because that is exactly the native tongue of the people who began this kind of magic. And personally, this makes a lot of sense. I mean, this makes a lot of sense because magic is very old, obviously, and human civilization is even older. So even if they couldn't, you know, truly figure out what magic was at the time, because, I mean, they don't really know how life works at that point. You know, they don't have laws of physics or anything. Of course, they know, you know, what happens when they throw an apple, or, you know what happens when they do this or that. They still aren't, you know, going to be shocked if, you know, magic is part of their world. Even if it's not, you know, waving their wand and, like, casting sparks and then, like, the cat turns into a dog. You know, that kind of magic probably didn't exist. That was probably too particular in advance. But it was probably the kind of magic that, you know, gave strength or wisdom or sight, or maybe the first seers were kind of around then, and it wasn't dialed in as like you close your eyes and you see, you know, the five years in the future. But it might have been like, you know, you kind of have a feeling of what's going to happen, you know, that kind of magic kind of evolving. And maybe because those, you know, spells were being used, but like I'm going back to the point of, you know, Latin is kind of their native tongue. So it wouldn't be so strange, you know, to say, you know, I await a guardian, or, you know, whatever it is, because that is exactly what is natural. Like if we were like casting a spell, you know, and we wanted to like have a fireball, we wouldn't, you know, find the word for Latin and a fireball and like wave our wand and say, we would probably say like fireball and like, or something, you know, whatever. That is exactly what they did. You know, they were, you know, using the words that made sense to them. And that's exactly how it stuck around. I think they just sound more, you know, magical, because that is, you know, it is an old language, an ancient language. And it is, you know, very official to say, you know, expecto patronum. Like that just sounds so, you know, majestic and regal. And that is exactly, you know, what incantation has stuck around for so long. So that, this is definitely one that I find to be more plausible, because even if, you know, spoken incantations were kind of developed before this, it was definitely not, you know, to the scale of, you know, this, of, you know, actual, just you take out your wand and you say the words and then the magic happens. You know, it wasn't that intense. But of course, that also goes into the idea of what were wands back then. But I think to stick with incantations, because we are going to get into that a little bit later, I think, like I've been saying, and the reason why I like this so much is it makes so much sense. You know, if you really think about it, if you were to design magic now, you would use English words. And then, you know, in 2000 years, that would be ridiculous, because English is not like whoever speaks English at this point anymore. Like, what? Why would you ever do that? But that is exactly why it sounds, you know, so magical. Like I've been saying this whole time, you know, it is so official, and it is very, you know, of course, being a dead language, you know, you aren't just going around saying that. So I think that is kind of, that's kind of my bare bones just overview of kind of why I think that in general. But this is definitely one of the more plausible on this list. I'm sorry to say, this might not go exactly as planned, because I was stretching with a lot of these. But let's move on. There is so much more to discuss. Okay, so moving further, I do want to dive into wands a little bit, because that is kind of what I was talking about before, kind of saying that we would get into it. But wands that's definitely a more difficult topic, because it is much harder to trace. I think language is a lot easier to, you know, trace backwards, you know, saying like seeing, you know, what was written on a tablet, you know, this many thousands of years ago versus what was written on a tablet that many thousands of years ago. You know, there's like different ways to measure that, and it's much easier to track. than, for example, a wand or a core or anything like that. That is much more difficult to understand the origins of than a language itself. But nonetheless, we can try. So this is kind of my proposed explanation of why wands have evolved to why they are today, to about a foot long, piece of thin wood with a magical core in the middle. Why was it, designed that way? Well, I think this is definitely more simple explanation, but a wand, that kind of shape isn't hard to find at all. That is how trees grow. That is so easy to make. I mean, it is ridiculous how easy it is. I'm walking outside and I'm like, oh, that could be a wand. Oh, that could be a wand. That could be a wand. That could be a wand. And we've seen, in the Harry Potter series and the films how wands are curved. They aren't always perfectly straight. They aren't always perfectly the same color. They have, little bumps, little ridges. Maybe, the handle's a little more rough and the tip, is smoother. Of course, you can smooth anything out. It's not that hard. But that is kind of, it just exactly like that's how it, it just felt natural that way. And I think to go even further, that is how, that's kind of easily directing of magic. That shape makes a lot of sense. If you point it at something, you aren't going to expect it, to come out the end. You know exactly where the magic is going to come out from. Versus for example, a ball, like a wooden ball, like a perfectly smooth ball. You can't just go out and find that in the woods, you have to really make the time to do that. And even then, you hold up the ball and then what happens? Do you say it and then it just shoots out in the right direction? It's much more unpredictable. It's just so unnatural. But a wand, you point it, you know exactly, if you gave somebody who's never seen a wand before, they would know exactly what to do with it. It's just so natural. So when magic was coming into fruition and people kind of needed a way to direct the magic after kind of realizing that, the hands weren't, enough for what they were trying to do, that is exactly what they thought they would do. They would use it's conducting, an orchestra, it's better control, it's just better, direction. But of course, there's another part of this, and that is the core. And there is another simple explanation that really stood out to me, because I was reading, so I'm currently reading The Half-Blood Prince. I feel like I haven't read it in a while, so might as well. But I was reading The Funeral of Aragog chapter, and Slughorn was in Hagrid's hut, and he was looking up, and he saw unicorn's hair, all over, and he was like, Hagrid, this is so valuable, 10 gallons of hair, what are you doing with it? And Hagrid said, oh, it's dead useful, it comes off, if you unicorns are running in the forest, it might come off in the trees and bushes, I just collect it, it's good for bandages. And that was whoa, that makes so much sense. Unicorn's hair can come out super easily, and then a perfectly long, thin strand of magical material is just sitting there in a forest filled with wand-shaped items. You kind of see what's kind of forming here. And though we may not, of course, a dragon heart string is more difficult to come by than a, unicorn hair, but still, I think that is a very good explanation, and that makes a lot of sense of why, that magical, for example, a unicorn hair, and why cores kind of evolved at the same time. Because, you have to find a wand, call it a tree, at first to actually even have a chance of creating magic. But of course, then you needed a sort of amplifier, a way to kind of direct the power. And if unicorn hair comes out that easily, that is a perfect opportunity to use it. And those probably, they've probably grown. A troll whisker is probably not that hard to find, And of course, you need to find a troll, but you just pluck it out. And that also goes for a thestral tail hair. And I'm sure, we've seen in The Secrets of Dumbledore when Credence's phoenix is flying overhead, it's not exactly keeping all of its feathers. So, of course, that would be a lot more rare than a unicorn hair, but it's still very possible for a, phoenix feather to be found. So there's a lot of, pieces that kind of fit together strangely easily for this, and it makes a strange amount of sense that wizards and witches would find these long strands of magical material in the woods and these long wand shaped sticks, and they make a little hole in it, they put the string in, they seal the end. that's a wand. That is a wand. And maybe it's not as, you know, as fine an art as Ollivander. But I'll direct your attention again. He has a sign outside of his, you know, shop that says, you know, making wands since 300 BCE. I mean, that's pretty convenient. You know, that's just about the time when, you know, spells were evolving. And, you know, that's kind of, that fits into the puzzle very easily. And maybe Ollivander is part of a long line of some of the original wand makers of the world. So, I don't know, this is another one that I feel like we might have just uncovered something, you know, we might have just seen something's happening. So, that is kind of my explanation for how wands kind of come into being. But that is very cool, because to think that if all we need is a wand-quality wood and unicorn hair and boom, magic, that is pretty cool. But that is wands, we have more stuff to cover, so let's move on. The next origin story on this list is definitely one of the more irrational, but it's certainly one that came to mind nonetheless, and that is of an ulterior motive of magical schools. So we know that there are, I think it's like about 11 magical schools, major magical schools around the world. Of course, there are thousands more, but those are the major ones. There are some in Europe, America, South America, Russia, Asia. They're all over, and there are two things that kind of tip me off that maybe there's more of a purpose for them besides education. So kind of what I'm thinking is, like, besides, you know, teaching children, they could also be used as kind of a safe house for wizards. And just in case of a, you know, disaster, say muggles find out about magic, and then, you know, they have to kind of go into hiding, that is kind of a good way for that to happen, because there is certainly enough space. I mean, in Hogwarts alone, all the wizards and witches in Britain could, of course, fit in there. I mean, all the students, like thousands of people fit and, like, can fit in the Great Hall alone, and there's, of course, classrooms and hallways and all this. Like, there's so much space that it could definitely be turned into, like, a home for people to stay. But that, of course, then multiplied by the amount of wizards in the world, but then also multiplied by the amount of schools there are. So it makes sense that they could act as a, you know, place for wizards and witches to stay if there was any trouble. Like, if muggles went after them, or if even there was a wizarding war, then they could stay there. And there are a couple of reasons why I think that. Number one is, I think, for example, Hogwarts is ridiculously protected. Like, it is unbelievable the amount of protection that was put onto Hogwarts. I mean, you can't operate onto the grounds. There's, like, spells around it. And we saw in the Half-Blood Prince, you know, there's a huge bubble around it. You know, there's protection spells, and you can't, like, do any, like, it is so heavily protected. You can't just, like, you can't fly over it. Like, there's nothing you can do. Like, it is very, very protected. And I can only imagine that those other magical schools are the same. Number two is that the locations are protected. And that is probably the one that tipped me off the most. The one most useful thing of a, you know, safe house is that you don't know where it is. The headquarters of the Order of the Phoenix, you know, Hermione gave it up, and that is exactly why they couldn't use it anymore. But they could use that before because no one knew where it was. And, you know, the defenses around the school could act as a kind of secondary line of defense behind, you know, just the actual secrecy of the location. And then that also, you know, if muggles were to stumble upon it, if, say, they were trying to, you know, get wizards and witches and burn them, they would only see, you know, a haunted building or a big sign that says, you know, keep out. That's exactly what they see at Hogwarts. That is very, very convenient. And I certainly would not question it. You know, if I saw that, even if I, you know, thought Hogwarts is around here, I would only think that is a, you know, that's not Hogwarts. That's just, you know, a, you know, site of magical terror, you know, that's put up by Hogwarts. I wouldn't think twice. So it's that kind of thing that makes me think maybe there's something more. And witch burnings are very, I'm not going to say popular, but they are not unheard of. You know, I mean, in the 1600s in Salem, Massachusetts, that was a huge deal. And, you know, people that are, you know, exhibit, you know, odd qualities are always, like, shunned by society. And even if it's the smallest thing, that doesn't really, you know, work in their favor. But it gets even worse when it is, you know, hundreds of people in the same area doing the same thing that seems a little suspicious, that then could easily spark just this, you know, huge, you know, witch hunt that would capture all magical people. But then again, it has not happened in a very long time, which is probably why the students and staff, at least, I'm sure Dumbledore knows to some degree, but witch burnings are not a very popular practice anymore. So I think it makes sense that that function is kind of, you know, more put in, you know, in the background, you know, kind of kept out of the light, because that's not really a good look for wizards, you know, to assume that muggles are just going to attack them. But that still stands that I think there is something else going with magical schools. But there are a couple more things on this list that I want to get to, so let's move on. So this next explanation is definitely a little more surface level. It is not as deep, it is not as meaningful, but it is still a very interesting one nonetheless. And that is about pumpkin juice. We all know that Hogwarts is a hot spot for pumpkins. They have huge pumpkins at Halloween. They have, you know, pumpkin juice all year round. That is, the, you know, a nice ice cold glass of pumpkin juice is exactly what Harry, Ron, and Hermione are dreaming about on the hot summer days. But it's kind of weird, you know. Pumpkin juice is not what I don't keep, you know, my pumpkin juice in my fridge next to the eggs. You know, that's not really something that I have, you know. I've never gone to my supermarket and I just see, you know, the pumpkin juice on the shelf. That is not something that I have really, you know, thought about as common. So reading about pumpkin juice this, pumpkin juice that, like, why do they drink so much pumpkin juice? Well, I've got the answer right here. It is 100% made up, but I think it is 100% true. So I did some very surface level research and found that the UK produces millions of pumpkins every single year. It is a huge production there. But that also begs the question of, it would be so suspicious to be sending, like, for example, I mean, water, you know, to have a, you know, say, you know, dozens of miles of piping, you know, running through the ground to some random location in the middle of Scotland, you know, for water, for Hogwarts. Like, that seemed a little strange. And of course, water exists, but it is from the lake. So where, you know, what can they drink? Well, they produce a lot of pumpkins, so it is not as suspicious to be sending that many pumpkins out to Hogwarts than to reroute an entire, you know, thing of water. But though it may be less suspicious, it's still strange to send, I mean, say, for example, they need, like, you know, 10,000 pumpkins in a year. I would look twice if, you know, I was sending out an order of 10,000 pumpkins out, you know, to the random, to, like, the Scottish mountains. Like, So another explanation is they grow them themselves, which is why it is so common for wizards to have pumpkin juice, and also why they can keep it up for so long. Because someone is going to come looking in 1,000 years of sending, you know, at this point, millions of pumpkins to this random place in Scotland. Someone's going to come looking, and that someone is going to report back. So because the UK is such a good place to grow pumpkins, having that as a place to, like, you know, growing those makes a lot of sense for them to just drink, to then, you know, use and harvest and do all that stuff. We saw Hagrid, like, his hut, and of course you're saying, well, why isn't it, you know, and, like, why isn't it any other fruit? Well, we've seen that pumpkins are perfect. You know, Hagrid, with a little tap, you know, tap from his umbrella, those pumpkins grow like crazy. They become huge. So having that amount of, like, pure pumpkin just to eat, you know, to eat and drink and have a sustenance, that is a pretty convenient place. And that is a very nice source of food. And of course, the Hogwarts grounds are humongous. So the fact that they might have a pumpkin farm or two does not surprise me in the slightest. So that is my very thought out and philosophical PhD dissertation on why wizards use pumpkin juice. So there you have it. But there's one more thing that I want to discuss in this episode. So let's move on. So the final thing that I want to discuss today is about muggle magic tricks. And I think you all know exactly where I'm going with this one. But it is my belief that muggle magic tricks evolved right alongside, or perhaps they are the same as wizard magic tricks. What? Well, let me explain. So, wizards need to make money, right? So, I mean, doing magic is probably one of those things that seems like a very easy way to make money. And though making a ball disappear from a cup may seem, you know, trivial to a wizard, to a muggle who does not know what magic is, that would be pretty amazing. If someone came up to me and handed me a deck of cards in my hand, then they tapped it and it disappeared, I would be pretty amazed. And that is exactly, I think, why wizards have done this. It is the perfect way to, you know, use magic in front of muggles without them realizing it, because they just assume that you're good with your hands, or, you know, you use, like, the sleight of hand, you know, you slip the card on top of the deck or whatever, you know, you can do anything. I mean, Fred and George have caught on to this, you know, they, I think, might have been the fifth year Christmas that they, Harry and Ron went home to the Burrow, and Fred and George, you know, they were skinning potatoes, and Fred and George said, you know, there's a woman in the shop, you know, in the village who loves our card tricks, you know, she says they're just like magic. Well, that is exactly what I'm talking about here. Wizards have caught on to the fact that muggles do not know what magic is, miraculously. So the fact that wizard magic tricks have evolved right around the same time as wizards does not surprise me at all. I think the first, you know, muggle magic was kind of, you know, coming about in Egypt around 2700 BCE, and that is pretty close to wizard magic. I mean, I think wizard magic has evolved in Africa. I mean, of course, that's where the first people were, so that makes a lot of sense. But then the fact that, you know, a couple thousand years later, once it has migrated up, you know, upwards and outwards to reaches Egypt, and that's when muggle magic tricks start going along, that makes a lot of sense. So I think that is exactly why muggle magic tricks are called, first of all, they're called magic tricks, but also why they are meant to be like magic. And I think that's why, you know, and of course, you know, I can do a magic trick, but I'm not a wizard. But it is, you know, through, like, little slips and little whatevers, you know, that really make the magic magical. So I feel like that's a pretty good explanation of why, you know, magic tricks have evolved in muggles as well as wizards. But that is essentially all that I've got for you today. This is definitely a confusing episode. This is definitely full of speculation and pure guessing. But at the same time, I had a lot of fun doing this. I hope you all enjoyed this episode. If you have any questions, comments, or topics you want to hear on the show, you can send me an email. My email is thepodgerdiscussion@gmail.com. That is thepodgerdiscussion@gmail.com. You can send me a DM on Instagram. My Instagram is @thepodgerdiscussion. And if you wouldn't mind reviewing the show, if you enjoyed today's episode or the show in general, a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or Podchaser would be greatly appreciated. It helps other listeners find the show. It helps me out a lot. I want to thank you all for everyone who does that. All right. As always, remember that happiness can be found even in the darkest of times if one only remembers to turn on the light. I will see you later.
This was the Potter Discussion.